dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host, and my privilege is to escort you about the battle space of the war of ideas. We will be bringing on several of the best in the business to visit with us about breaking stories, starting momentarily with Elaine Donnelly. She has been leading the charge against the imposition on our military of the social experiment that has been misnamed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's an extraordinary story. It is coming to a head today with the certification by the president and others that the military is ready for this social experiment. We'll find out from Elaine whether that's so and what are the risks if it's not. We'll also be speaking with Congressman Frank Wolf about, among other things, an initiative that he has to try to enhance the Transportation Security Administration. We'll be visiting with Dr. Zudi Jasser on his heroic efforts to try to counter the Muslim Brotherhood and its efforts to impose on Muslims like him, as well as the rest of us, Sharia. And finally, we'll be speaking with our regular inside the ring guy, Bill Gertz, about this gaze in the military business, but also what's happening to the defense budget and what's coming at us from a growing Chinese threat. So all of that straight ahead. But first, our guest is Elaine Donnelly, one of the most extraordinary professionals I've had the privilege to work with in my career in national security. She is the founder and president and driving force of a superb organization called the Center for Military Readiness. Even her critics, and she has many, have been grudgingly admiring of what Elaine Donnelly has done to both help illuminate and really drive debate about the national security risks that we are running as we engage in this kind of social experimentation of the only military we have and one that we are taxing to the extreme in time of war. We're speaking with Elaine before the president's certification event, and we are going to be talking about what comes in its aftermath. But Elaine, tell us what you make of this certification that the military is ready for gays to be imposed in their ranks.
Well, it is totally bogus and manufactured by the administration, because last year, during a process called the Comprehensive Review Working Group process, a survey of the troops was done, and it turns out that that survey was prescripted. The results were prescripted even before the survey instrument went out to the troops. We also know that someone in the administration deliberately manipulated the media, leaked misleading results to the Washington Post before all the internal details could be seen. The internal details showed that about 60% of Army combat troops and 67% of Marine combat troops expressed concerns about combat readiness. But here we have a brand new Secretary of Defense, Mr. Leon Panetta, as his first official act, letting down the troops in a big way. Everyone in Washington is distracted by the debt crisis, and it is a crisis. But I think the damage done to our only military is much more serious, because we can always fix the economy when things go wrong most of the time. But once you undermine and destroy the culture of the military, what makes it better than any other armed forces in the world, once you make it a social experiment as a political payoff to the LGBT left, then you create problems.
This LGBT left is the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender left, and we may find all of those flavors being imposed on the military here. Elaine, very quickly, tell us, how did we get to this point?
Well, the president was elected in 2008, and he made promises to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender groups, the LGBT left, and he's determined to deliver on that. Now, notice this announcement, this action meeting, whatever is taking place or has taken place on a Friday afternoon. This is nothing to be proud of. They really don't want people to understand just how harmful this is going to be to the armed forces if they are required, and they will be, to pretend that sexuality doesn't matter, to face a huge mess of unresolved issues such as the status of same-sex marriage in the military. Pressures are already on to authorize that. The Department of Defense has signaled a willingness to transform the force into an LGBT-friendly military, what we call the San Francisco military. When that happens, it will not be the same armed forces that we have, and the focus only on a tiny minority of a minority and overlooking the majority of people who volunteer to serve, this is a travesty. And the survey that was skewed last year and prescripted before July and leaked to the media to have a political effect, this is not my conclusion, by the way. The Department of Defense Inspector General issued a report on this after following an investigation. One of the people they did not talk to, but who was very suspicious in this operation, was James Messina, the Deputy Chief of Staff of the President, the liaison to the LGBT activist groups. The day after a meeting that he was present at the White House, comes this misleading story in the Washington Post. 70% of the military are okay with this. This was a bogus story.
We're also told the other piece of this, Elaine, is, of course, that this manipulation, this dissemination of misleading information had a very profound effect on what went down on Capitol Hill in the lame duck session. Just a word about that. And again, where does this leave us going forward? You've mentioned a couple of things, and I just want to cover one or two more before we're done. So give me quickly what went on Capitol Hill last year.
Well, in the lame duck session, the legislation to repeal this law with delayed implementation was passed. The certification occurring today triggers a 60-day time period before final implementation goes into place. But the day and the hour that the president puts his hand to a paper certifying no problems to the military, he will own the San Francisco military that he has created. He needs to be held accountable. Any member of Congress who voted for this should be held accountable. The presidential candidates should be required to take a stand on this issue, because they would be the commander-in-chief who would be called upon to repair the damage, which will not be apparent immediately.
No, it won't, but it will
but
be
it
something
will eventually.
I know you're going to be monitoring closely at the Center for Military Readiness. Our guest is Elaine Donnelly, and this is one of the things that I just want to close with, Elaine. We've got about a minute. There are parts of the U.S. Military Code that are the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as it's called, that will have to be changed to accommodate this.
Yes.
There are questions about how Muslim countries in which we're deployed are going to be dealing with homosexuals when they do not permit homosexuality. There are questions, as you said, about benefits and the Defense of Marriage Act implications and so on. All of this suggests that the military can't possibly be ready for this. And I just wonder very quickly, what is your sense of what we should look for to see if it's breaking?
Repeatedly, members of Congress asked questions about those issues in the current Congress, 112. In April, there were two hearings. And the witnesses, including the military witnesses, when asked how will this benefit the military, what about these thorny issues, same-sex marriage, Muslim troops, and so on, their answer was, I don't know. So the show today indicating that, well, the military is buying into this, this is also not true. It's being manufactured by the president. Yes, there have been training classes, but training classes don't guarantee anything. Anyone can sit through a PowerPoint presentation. That doesn't mean that all these thorny issues are going to go away. So the current members of Congress need to follow this very closely and take corrective action when the opportunity arises. That means we need to elect a new president.
Yeah. And Elaine Donnelly, I know you will be helping them understand whether we are, in fact, as I think both you and I fear, breaking the only military we have, the all-volunteer force. Thank you for your tremendous service to our country, Elaine Donnelly, for all that you have done and will be doing in the future, and we look forward to talking with you frequently about it here at Secure Freedom Radio.
First line of defense in the war of ideas, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at SecureFreedomRadio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the medical system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Congressman Frank Wolf. I'm very proud to say my congressman from the northern part of Virginia. It's 10th District in the United States House of Representatives. He has served there since 1981, making him one of the most senior members and certainly, I think, one of the most beloved as well as most influential members of the House of Representatives. A longtime member, I believe cardinal is the technical term for it, a leader of the House Appropriations Committee and currently the chairman of the Commerce, Science, and Justice Subcommittee. Congressman Wolf, it is a great pleasure to have you with us. You have been active on so many different fronts. It's hard to know where to begin, but I think one that's obviously most topical at the moment is an initiative you've just launched on the Transportation Security Administration. Tell us what you have in mind and why you think it's necessary.
We would have the term be a set term, 10 years, the same as the director of the FBI. You've had so many vacancies over there, Frank. You've had so many stops and starts. You can't, there's no continuity. You bring a new person on, they got to reinvent the wheel. And I think that the more we take that out of the political process, put someone in, they can be removed for cause, clearly. But they would have 10 years whereby they could work this thing, develop it. So the FBI was going through the same thing. They would have people for 2 years, 3 years, and back and forth, and nobody could ever really kind of get a handle. Now, Mueller's been there for 10. As you know, they're going to extend it for 2 to carry them over for the next 2 years. But I think you get that permanency there that you really, really need. And I think without it, we're going to continue to have the stop and the start. TSA is in the news constantly. People are complaining. But every time you bring a new director in, and I think the current director, Mr. Pistol, is a good person, but I think they need to stay for a set period of time. The same thing holds true for the NASA administrator. NASA has been time after time. They have one administrator, then they have another administrator, then they have a long vacancy where there's no one there, and that's why the Chinese are surpassing us, and we're just not doing very well. So that's the purpose, to treat it the same way as the FBI, continuity, longevity, experience, so that the person can concentrate on what the job is and not move it out every couple of years.
Right. Let's come back to the NASA in a moment, because obviously with the end of the space shuttle program today, it's much in our thoughts. But just staying with the Transportation Security Administration for a moment, Congressman Frank Wolf, is the problem with, well, the tenure as much as it's been with the character or capabilities of the individuals? I mean, is part of the problem here the personalities and their, you know, inadequacies rather than their reliance on a certain fixed term in office?
Well, partially, but if you recall, the person before the current director, he had a hard time being confirmed. They had to withdraw the appointment. John Pistol is a good person. I know him. He was the deputy at the FBI. He had been a career FBI agent for, well over 20-some years. I think Pistol is probably as good as you're going to get. But hopefully when we change administrations next time, are we going to get another person, and then it'll take a year to confirm that person. And this is important to our national security. We all remember what took place on the Christmas Day bomber. We see TSA is going back and forth. There's complaints. There was complaints yesterday based on the new machinery that they have coming to put it in certain airports. And it's just a mess. And so I don't think it's quality here, because Pistol's a good person. I worked with him for a long period of time at the FBI. I think he just has to know he's going to be there for a period of time. I was actually surprised that he left the Bureau to take the job at the TSA, particularly with the track record that they have. But he's a public servant, and he did it.
Yep. Well, to his credit.
But he's a good person, Frank. I don't think you're going to get a better person.
Yeah, well, let's just say for the purpose of discussion he is, and that giving him a fixed tenure would, if he decides to stay on in that capacity, be helpful. But may I ask you about another piece of the puzzle here? The prospect of unionization of the TSA, that was not...
Well, I'm opposed to that.
Yeah,
I think
the administration is pushing.
Particularly the House has made it clear. You cannot have collective bargaining and have unionization of TSA. The same principle there, Frank, is the same principle that applies to Secret Service agents, or the same principle that applies to FBI agents or DEA agents. So when that was implemented and set up, there was a prohibition with regard to that, and I support that. We've had several votes in the Congress this year. That is the will of the House. I'm not sure what the will of the Senate is.
Yeah, but I gather the administration is nonetheless continuing to beaver away at trying to...
the administration is correct.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, as I know you will. Congressman Wolf, you have been arguably the single most insistent advocate for the people of Sudan for years now. Tell us about your sense of what has just happened, the creation of the new nation of Southern Sudan, and not only how you feel about it, but how the country should feel about what has happened in this long-suffering country to these horribly repressed people.
It's a very rewarding thing to see. It's the newest country in the world, Southern Sudan. The independence came about on July 9. There was an official delegation that went over to be there at the time. Did not get that much coverage in the press. Sudan has been at war with the North. The Southerners have been at war with the North well over 20 years. 2.1 million died in that battle in North-South fighting. And most were Christians in the South, some animists, few Muslims, but it was the Khartoum government of the North that did all the bad things there, basically. This is the same government operated, run by President Bashir, who is an indicted war criminal with the International Criminal Court. So not only do you have he was involved in that North-South fighting for a long period of time. Secondly, keep in mind that Sudan had Osama bin Laden living there from 91 to 94 and 95. So they welcomed bin Laden into Sudan. Thirdly, in those days, you would have Hamas. Hezbollah was very active in Khartoum, and there were also training camps there. You can continue to base all of this whole terrorist activity in many respects generated out of a meeting that took place in Khartoum. You had Tarabi, who you may know who he is, and he had invited some people in. So it was a very bad scene. Now we see this guy, Bashir, who was the current president, is responsible for the genocide, and it is genocide, in Darfur. You've had 200 to some say 400,000 people that have died in the genocide. I was the first member of the House with Sam Brownback from the Senate to go to Darfur to see with my own eyes. We have a museum in the mall said the Holocaust man said never again, and yet it is taking place as we talk. And you have Antonov bombers that fly over that drop bombs. You have Soviet Hind helicopters that gun people down. You have the John Dewey men on horseback and camel that ride in with AK-47s, many of them furnished by the Chinese government. And that's the North. And so I think the fact that the South has separated and broken away, they'll be very good friends of the United States. It's to our advantage to make sure that they make it. There are a lot of minerals there. There's a lot of oil there. And we want to make sure that we are the dominant friends of theirs and not China or something like this. But overall, the people have suffered for so many years. And, of course, Sudan is mentioned in the Bible. It's the kingdom of Kush. And it's people of great faith, went through a very difficult time. But I think to see freedom and independence take place on July 9th was very important.
Yeah, and very, very much to your credit, Congressman Frank Wolf.
Well, I think the guy, I tell you, a guy who really deserves a lot of credit is President Bush. Bush appointed John Danforth as a special envoy. Danforth did a very good job. I have not seen an article crediting Danforth for the great work that he did in signing the North-South Agreement. I was actually there in 2005 in Nobby, Kenya, with Senator Danforth, and Colin Powell was there. But no one has given Danforth the credit, nor has anyone given President Bush the credit. And so I think they both deserve a tremendous amount of credit. Yet for some reason, out of sight, out of mind in this town, but they both, I think it's a tribute to Danforth and a tribute to Bush.
Well, you are characteristically modest, Frank Wolf. You deserve your share of it as well. And I think for all of us who have been praying over and horrified by what has been going on there, it is indeed a happy day. I just hope that the same kind of happy outcome may yet be available to the other people, the Nubians and the people in Darfur who are still being assaulted by, as you say, the folks of the North. Islamists to the core, and it really bears considerable watching, as well as your great work. Thank you so much, Congressman Frank Wolf, for joining us once again at Secure Freedom Radio. Please come back to us soon. We'll be following both of these stories with you in the future, I know.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag, it's a pouch. And it's not sand, it's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes, I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by one of my personal heroes, Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is the founder and president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, an extraordinary organization of Muslims who love this country, who want to live in it in peace and with tolerance for others' religions, and who do not seek, as unfortunately some in their community do, to impose this totalitarian program known by some to be Sharia on anybody. And Zudi, I have admired you from the first time we met, and your starring role in a film that we produced years ago now, Islam versus Islamists, and I'm so appreciative of your continuing service to our country, having served in uniform, the United States Navy, having served as a health provider in Arizona, where you currently operate, and not least, by any means, your service through the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Frank. Appreciate it.
One of your most recent initiatives, Dr. Jasser, is something you call the American Islamic Leadership Coalition. I want you to tell us what that is, because we're endlessly told that the leadership of the American Muslim community is made up of individuals and organizations known to be associated with a group that has none of your characteristics, that is actually very hostile to this country, very determined to bring Sharia here, very insistent on imposing their will on others, namely the Muslim Brotherhood. So what is the American Islamic Leadership Coalition?
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, many people have been saying, Frank, and, you know, thanks a lot to your work and early work, like when you put together that film, you brought and highlighted moderates and reformists around North America and in Europe. And we started to get to a critical mass, and we've come together. It's not just the work at American Islamic Forum and what we're doing, but there are many other groups and leaders that have been blazing a path of reform, working against the elephant in the room, which is the Muslim Brotherhood legacy groups and the ideology of Islamism and its instrument of using Sharia law and government to try to monopolize our community and take it over. And we came together as a coalition. We formed four of us came together in September last year, brought to Washington by Congresswoman Myrick and her leadership. And then actually after my testimony in the hearings in March, Congressman Peter King's hearings, a number of groups reached out to us and said, you know, listen, we with every word of your testimony, and we really want to help what you're doing. So we broadened the coalition, and now it includes over 25 Muslim leaders and members. And those 25 have now, we through AISD, have been leading conference calls with them internationally on a twice-a-month basis. We saw the Obama administration put together a counterterrorism strategy that they rolled out 2 weeks ago that John Brennan presented at Johns Hopkins, and we were just aghast at the omissions and the problems in that counterterrorism strategy. So we put together a white paper. We worked feverishly over the last 2 weeks to put it together, and we put it out yesterday as a coalition. Out of our coalition, 14 members signed it. Includes leaders from the Bangladeshi community, from the Iranian community, from the Pakistani community, Arabic community, and you'll see signatories on that at our website at AmericanIslamicLeadership.org that pretty much should be able to show people. And what's interesting is that for all of the thousands that belong to the Brotherhood groups, they have yet to produce anything substantive as far as countering the threat of radicalism and the ideology that fuels it. And now we, in just our first year of, or 6 months of infancy, have produced a white paper that we hope the Obama administration will look at as far as what they missed, what their strategy, which is too narrow looking at Al-Qaeda, should broaden, and how to engage Muslim groups that they claim they want to do.
Yeah. Zudi, let's drill down on this a little bit, because what, again, we're being told by these very visible, very prominent, very well-funded Muslim Brotherhood legacy groups, I guess you call them, is that they are responsible for having worked very successfully with the John Brennans of the Obama administration and others to ferret out plots and expose extremists and otherwise help with the counterterrorism fight. My experience is very different, and I know yours has been as well. Tell us what your recommendations are in this new white paper of the American Islamic Leadership Coalition. What should the government be doing specifically instead of what it's doing with these legacy groups?
Yeah, and I think, you know, what it's doing to the legacy groups now is simply identifying the target as violent extremism, which is so vague you can't defeat it. And they're going to continue to do this whack-a-mole program and empower Islamist groups. And what they should be doing, for example, the word ideology in Brennan's report appeared 20 times, but yet they never identified what it is. So they need to say that Islamism, political Islam, is the ideology that fuels Al-Qaeda, that Al-Qaeda is simply a violent manifestation of Islamism, not just of extremism, but of Islamism. They should distinguish between the religion itself and Islamist ideology and the statist agenda of Islamism. They should acknowledge the diversity of American Muslims and not talk about us as a monolithic entity and allow the Islamists to lead that, and they don't do that. They talk about the Muslim community as if it was one monolith, when in fact it's a huge, diverse community. And you'll see in our coalition, we've come together as diverse political groups from left to right, but yet we agree on one thing, which is that we want to separate mosque and state. We want to defeat political Islam as a status global agenda, and that it fuels radicalization. In our recommendations, we tell them to engage non-Islamist group and take sides. Right now, they're not taking any sides. They have this big tent approach, which is their new counterterrorism strategy, which is to have this big tent approach. But that's harmful. Imagine in the Cold War, which you're much more experienced than me, Frank, imagine if we were fighting the Soviets and we had a big tent approach and we approached the so-called peaceful communists in Central America and South America and all over the world just because they weren't Soviets, and that would have been a disaster. So, you know, this is what we're trying to do, is tell them to take sides in those that are giving substantive recommendations to counter ideology. And each of us in our own right as a coalition, for example, AIFD, we have a Muslim Liberty Project that has engaged youth. We now have active Facebook pages with over 100 Muslim young adults that are engaged in articulating the ideas of liberty within AIFD. This is the way to inoculate Muslims against radicalization. The other groups are not doing that.
Yeah. Azudi, this is very encouraging, and I couldn't agree with you more about the importance of it and welcoming of your initiative here. And again, we're speaking with Dr. Azudi Jasser, a physician in Phoenix, Arizona, where he founded and runs the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. And let me just ask you, in closing, Azudi, and quickly, to what extent do you think the fact that the Obama administration, like the Bush administration before it, and for that matter, like the Clinton administration before it, is listening to, is interfacing exclusively with, as best I can tell, these Muslim Brotherhood fronts, that they're getting it so wrong, that their strategy is so flawed, that their outreach is limited only to the wrong sorts of people within the Muslim community?
Well, I think it's pretty extensive, and, you know, it's not just the Obama administration. As we know, the Bush administration also, because of political correctness, reached out to ISNA and other groups. So, you know, just last week, President Obama himself called MPAC, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and had a phone conversation with their executive director, and MPAC publicized that. So I'm concerned in that the step two of their counterterrorism strategy, they said, is going to be a rollout of which communities are going to work with. They've always had an excuse that we've not been on the map, really. Well, now we're on the map. We have an 8-page detailed policy paper that we hope will be spread around Congress, around media, around think tanks. And they can no longer say we don't bring anything to the table. So hopefully that'll change now that they have something substantive and we know it's going to be in their hand.
Well,
so,
we will do everything we can. Thank you, Azudi. We will do everything we can to help promote this white paper. You can find it at AIF, as in freedomdemocracy.org, AIFdemocracy.org, and we will link to it at our website, securefreedomradio.com, as well. Dr. Azudi Jasser, thank you so much for your superb work. Keep it up and come back to us soon.
Thank you, Frank.
Next up, Bill Gertz on the resistance to hollowing out our military. Is there going to be enough? Will it be in time? Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes
to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are happily each week by one of the best journalists in the national security space. He is Bill Gertz. He is the editor for national security issues at the Washington Times and author of the must-read Inside the Ring column, as well as numerous books, including most recently The Failure Factory. And Bill, I got so much to talk to you about. We're going to whip through this, the lightning round, I guess they call it on some other programs. Just very quickly, we were talking earlier in the program with Elaine Donnelly about the certification that took place earlier today of the readiness of the military to have avowed homosexuals serving openly in its ranks. Your quick take on whether this will indeed go down painlessly or whether it will really represent a serious problem for the armed forces of the United States?
Well, it's clear that this was the ultimate goal of the Pentagon all along. They did a couple of sham studies and wanted to be able to certify that it wasn't going to cause any problems. My own view is I think it is going to cause huge problems. It's not just going to be a simple neutral thing about allowing homosexuals to be open in the military. They're going to be pushing the envelope And ultimately, if it's not done carefully, it could destroy the military as it is, as a fighting force. That's my opinion.
I fear you're right. I hope you're wrong, and Elaine is wrong, and I am wrong, but I very much fear you're right. Bill, Inside the Ring, you wrote about a splendid column, an article, an op-ed, I guess I should say, written in the Wall Street Journal by Fred Flights. I wonder if you might shed light on what he has exposed in the space of Iran.
Right. Fred Flights is a recently retired career intelligence officer. Most recently, he was on the staff of the House Intelligence Committee, and he disclosed in this op-ed that a revision to a controversial 2007 intelligence estimate that said Iran had halted its nuclear program in 2003, he argues, is also politicized as well. The first one was politicized with the specific goal of preventing the president that time, George W. Bush, from taking any kind of military action against Iran's nuclear program. And now you have the second iteration of that basically standing by this bogus estimate. It was quite a revelation, and he was Fred was very bold in coming forth with it. He had some problems with the CIA. They had to review, because of his secrecy agreement, they reviewed his article and blocked a number of key criticisms that he wanted to make about this this politicized intelligence process.
Yeah, I've known Fred for many years. He is a former CIA officer, as you say, and a very, very knowledgeable man. And it's a scandal that they're suppressing it, and it's more scandalous still that they are suppressing their own evidence of what is going on in Iran and the threat that it is increasingly representing. Bill, moving to yet another topic, the budget thrash going on in Washington in the context of the debt ceiling. You've written about Congressman Buck McKeon, a man I admire greatly, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, standing like Horatius at the bridge. What is your expectation of what's going to come out of this process? Will Buck McKeon's warnings against hollowing out of the military be heeded?
Yeah, this is going to be his biggest challenge now going forward. We have a budget fight, a debt ceiling limit fight that's underway now. The deadline is August 2nd. We don't know how that's going to end up, but McKeon has made it as his top priority as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee to hold the line and to say that, look, we've got to prevent the hollowing out of our military, because he pointed out in a recent memo that I reported on that the Gang of Six plan in the Senate, which is the one that the White House seems to have focused on, and if there's any compromise, will result in over $880 billion in additional defense cuts over what over the more than $400 billion that have been undertaken already, and another $400 billion that are planned. So we're looking at a crisis in defense spending.
Well, really, and in defense capabilities as well. As you know, Bill Gertz of the Washington Times is our guest, author of Inside the Ring. Bill, another feature of Inside the Ring this week was a very troubling story about the Obama administration's management of another portfolio, namely the China portfolio, specifically a gentleman at the National Security Council and some machinations that he seems to be going through, again, to impede our understanding, our awareness of the threat, which you've reported since you wrote that piece, is actually getting worse by the day. Tell us what's the latest on the China threat and what's happening inside the administration to keep us, well, a lot less aware of it than we should be.
This is basically a very important story that was the third item in my Inside the Ring column about a National Security Council staffer named Evan Medeiros. And he has been a key figure within the Obama administration in preventing our toughening defenses against China and also strengthening Taiwan's defenses. So what we have here is a situation where an operative, a political operative, who has an agenda. His agenda is that he's pro-China. He's trying to prevent the administration from strengthening alliances with Japan and India and others in Asia as a counterbalance against China. And he has taken the position that the U.S. should shift its policies in favor of communist China. And he's done this very cleverly through some policy machinations, bureaucratic maneuvering. He's prevented the sale of arms to Taiwan, which are required under a 1979 Taiwan Relations Act. He's also blocked release of several critical reports to Congress, which are needed in the budget debate. And again, we're talking about defense spending. Many in the military say that we urgently need to build defense systems against China now, and this person has been blocking those.
Mm. Let's talk about one of the newest of these weapons that China seems to be interested in bringing to bear against particularly our aircraft carriers, some kind of pulse weapons. Tell us what we know about this, Bill, and what kind of threat it represents to our fleet.
Major threat. This was a 2005 declassified study made public on Thursday by the National Security Archive, a private group, provides new details on China's development of electromagnetic pulse and high-powered microwave weapons. These are exotic weapons, and the report accurately puts them in the context of these of what the Chinese call assassin's mace weapons. That is, niche weapons that allow a weaker power, namely China, to defeat a stronger power, the U.S. military. And this is a big problem. A lot of people have been trying to alert the public to it, and now finally we've got some new details on what they're up to. They're aiming to use this against Taiwan to knock out its communications as part of an invasion there, and most importantly, they plan to use them against U.S. aircraft carriers that are the key to defending Taiwan against a mainland attack.
Yeah. Bill, we were speaking with Cynthia Ayers of Impact Emerita. She was talking about the strategic threat that an electromagnetic pulse weapon, a super EMP weapon, might entail in terms of the ability not only to attack our aircraft carriers and affect our ability to come to the aid of our friends in Taiwan, but actually, you know, if afflict catastrophic damage on the United States as well. From your study of China and its efforts in this area, is that something that we should actually be concerned about here at home as well?
Absolutely. I one of the people I interviewed was Peter Pry, who was a former congressional staffer who is now actively engaged in alerting the public to the danger of EMP weapons.
And right, one of Cynthia's colleagues,
too,
as a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, too, that there are these this possibility. See, when you read Chinese military doctrine, it's there. They talk about the element of surprise. They talk about all forms of warfare. So this is a real threat. That's something that has to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, your book is a good place to start, The China Threat, How the People's Republic Targets America. And also your reporting at Inside the Ring and elsewhere in the Washington Times. Bill Gertz, thank you so much for joining us and for these clarion warnings of the sorts of things we've got to be taking steps to address now, not later. And budget cutting of the kind that is now being contemplated is totally incompatible with that effort. Bill Gertz, thanks again for joining us. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
And my best to all of you until next week, when I hope you'll tune in again. Same time, same station. This is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.